Hello, this is Rachi Lerner speaking with you today from OU Radio. The topic for today is removing our spiritual chametz, removing our spiritual leavened bread. What do I mean by that? Well, we all know about the fact that matzah is the defining feature of Pesach. For 7 days, we eat matzah, and before those 7 days happen, we go ahead and we remove any vestige of chametz from our homes, from our offices, from our cupboards, etc. And we know that subsequent to the 7 days of Pesach, we will resume eating chametz again. So we actually have three parts to the prohibition of chametz. Number one, we do not eat it. Number two, we derive no use or benefit from it. And number three, we do not keep any chametz in our homes. And so what are these three parts? Rav Hirsch explains that the three parts of the prohibition come to teach us some very valuable and fundamental lessons. Number one, we do not eat chametz to indicate that our bodily needs are dedicated to God. We're basically saying by not eating chametz that we are giving over our bodily needs to God alone, because most of our bodily needs, if we look at it, are about us. It's about taking care of what I need for myself in the moment. Number two, we derive no benefit or use from chametz to show that it was through Hashem that we achieved the capacity to have possessions. And number three, we do not keep any chametz in our homes to show that all of our possessions come from God through Hashem, and everything at the end of the day belongs to God. So it's very clear that the theme or the thread that runs through these three is the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge, all belongs to Him, and we are subservient to Him, and we subordinate ourselves to Him. But why does chametz come to mean so much about self? Why does chametz seem to be emblematic of us and our material lives and our material beings? So we need to explore that a little bit more fully. What is it that differentiates between chametz and matzah? Essentially, they're composed of the same ingredients, flour, water, and oven time. So the key issue that differentiates between them, or the key issues, are time and yeast. Baked 18 minutes and under, matzah. More than 18 minutes, chametz. And, of course, yeast. The yeast causes the dough to rise, which makes, of course, chametz and not matzah. There's a lovely poem by Marge Piercy, who's a very famous poet, on matzah, and she says the following, and it pretty much heralds what we're going to be speaking about today and next week as well. Matzah, flat you are as a doormat and as homely, no crust, no glaze, you lack a cosmetic glow. You break with a snap, you are dry as a twig, split from an oak in midwinter. You are bumpy as a mud basin in a drought. Square as a slab of pavement, you have no insight to hide raisins or seeds. You are pale as the full moon, pocked with craters. What we see is what we get. Honest, plain, dry, shining with nostalgia, as if baked with light instead of heat. The bread of flight and haste in the mouth you promise. Home. Matzah, what we see is what we get. Honest, plain, dry, as if baked with light instead of heat. The matzah that brings us home, the bread that takes us back. It's a beautiful poem that heralds what we're going to speak about today. So chametz differentiates from matzah in that chametz is allowed to bring us to that higher level. Chametz is puffed up, bigger. Let's understand that a little bit more deeply. If we look at the way Rav Hirsch understands what's going on, he says the following, that what happened in Mitzrayim, if we look in Sefer Devarim, and we look in Perek Tetzayin, which is chapter 16, verse 3, we have the following commandment. Lo tochal alav chametz, you shall not eat leavened bread on it. Shivat yamim tochal alav matzot, for 7 days you shall consume matzah. Lechem oni, the bread of affliction. Ki bechipazon yatzata me'eretz Mitzrayim. Because you left Egypt, bechipazon, in a hurry, in haste. Leman tiskor et yom tzedcha me'eretz Mitzrayim kol yimei chayecha. In order to remember the day of your departure from the land of Mitzrayim, all the days of your life. So what does he say? That when the Jews left Egypt, They had no time to wait. Everything was done bechipazon. Rav Hirsch talks about the beginning of Magid, the beginning of the storytelling at the Seder, and he says, what do we start off with? We say, ha lach ma'anya. This is the bread of, traditionally defined as, affliction. This is the bread of affliction. This is the bread of poverty. But he says, no, that's not what it means. What was it? This is the bread, says Rav Hirsch, of dependence. When you are a dependent person, you do not allocate your time. Slaves are different from free men in their ability to allocate time. When you're a slave, your time is not your own. You work on your boss's timetable. And when we were slaves, we were oppressed and we surrendered control over our time. And even when we left Mitzrayim, how did we leave? We left bechipazon, in a hurry. Even at the moment that technically the redemption is beginning, we are not fully free to move. We left in a hurry. So says Rav Hirsch, who was in a hurry? Was it us? Or was it our oppressors? And he answers, it was their rush that compelled us to leave fast. Because if it were up to us, we had just been liberated. We could have sat down, we could have taken our time, we could have had a banquet, we could have had four courses. We could have sat back and taken it easy. But no, we were under duress, we were being coerced to leave because the Egyptians were under coercion for us to leave. It was right after Makat Bechorot, they had just lost their children. Paro was deathly afraid that he would be next because he was a Bechor, and he wanted us out, and he wanted us out now. Get the Jews out of Dodge. Get them out now. Therefore, we were not operating under our own free will, but the Mitzrayim as well were not operating under their own free will. Everybody was under duress. Only God acts freely at the moment of Yetziah. Only God is utterly free at the moment of redemption, at the moment of our exodus from Egypt. And this, says Rav Hirsch, is what marks the exodus, what marks Yetziat Mitzrayim, as being God's will and God's work. Because otherwise, the Egyptians could say, well, we let the Jews go. It was our largesse. It was our ability. It was our graciousness that permitted them to go. But they clearly were not operating freely. There was no freedom about their movement at all. And we could have said, well, here we are, 600,000 armed men. We chose when to leave. No. We left in a rush, unable to make proper bread. We were in a mad rush. Again, we had no freedom of choice. Because the person who eats chametz, says Rav Hirsch, is the person who controls time. He has the time to sit and wait for the bread to rise. He has the time to sit there and notice that it's taking its time and bread is rising. He eats when he chooses. The prohibition against eating chametz on Pesach is a symbolic one. We are to remember that at the moment that we exited Egypt, we were not acting freely. They were not acting freely. Only God is acting freely. At that moment in time, God is the only free agent. We need to recall and remember that. We need to always remember that at the moment of the Geula, God is the only being acting freely. We are entirely in God's hands. Rabbi Nathan Lopez Cardoza alludes to the question that is posed in the Talmud. This is in Brachot Yud Zayin Amud Aleph, in Brachot 17a. The Gemara poses the question, why is it forbidden to possess or eat chametz on Pesach? We frame it somewhat differently. We say, what is it about matzah that makes it the special food that we consume on Pesach? And the Talmud does a traditionally Jewish thing, which is to answer a question with a question. And it says, okay, here's the question. Why is it forbidden to eat chametz on Pesach? Why do people sin? Okay, so most normal human beings would say, okay, what is the linkage between sin and eating chametz? What does one have to do with the other? And thus begins a discussion in the Talmud about the nature of the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is the evil inclination, the evil impulse. And the Talmud begins an analysis of this paradox, that on the one hand, man wants to do the right thing. Man wants to do good. At the same time, man is continuously struggling and battling the Yetzer Hara. And in order to overcome his Yetzer Hara, his evil inclination, the Talmud recommends that human beings, and particularly Jews, should make the following declaration. They should say, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Galoy v'yadu lefanecha, it is well known before you, Sheritzonenu la'asot ritzonecha, that it is our will to do your will. Umi me'akev, and what is it that stands in our way? Se'or sheba'isa, the yeast in the dough. Ha'se'or sheba'isa, the yeast in the dough. What in goodness' name is being alluded to here? The yeast in the dough, the expression yeast in the dough, is frequently used in the Talmud as an allusion to the Yetzer Hara. So, chametz is what is obtained, leavened bread is what is obtained after the yeast in the dough causes the dough to rise, right? That's what happens. That's the outcome. Therefore, chametz is expressly forbidden because it has come to symbolize the Yetzer Hara. But why make that equivalence? Why have chametz symbolize the Yetzer Hara? And that is because of what yeast in the dough does. What is bread? Bread is blown up matzah, both made again of flour and water. Matzah, baked quickly, and baked slowly, chametz. The real difference, then, is not just speed, but hot air. In the case of matzah, there is no hot air. In the case of chametz, there is. So hot air, which is an ingredient that has absolutely no substance, it's not tangible, is the element that critically differentiates between chametz and matzah. Bread rises filled with hot air, becoming haughty, giving the impression that it has substance when in reality it's a puffed up cracker. That's what bread is. But a matzah is exactly what it appears to be. In the words of Marge Piercy, with matzah, we see what it is we get. Plain, simple, what you see is what you get. Bread, therefore, is haughty matzah. It symbolizes the evil inclination because its attitude is one of arrogance. It's arrogant bread. It's arrogant matzah. The Vilna Gaon is famous for this following quote. He says that people sin for one of two reasons. Mitoch ta'ava or mitoch ga'ava. Either because they have desires, they have the Yetzer Hara, and they want to do it. It's sort of in the words of Veruca in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. It was, she says, I want it, and I want it now. We want something, we know it's not allowed to us, and yet we persist in having it because we want it, and we want it now. Gava is the other reason why we sin. What is it about Gava? Gava says that I am a special character. I am a PC, as we used to say in the old days, a privileged character. I am special. Therefore, when I'm special, the rules of the road don't apply to me. Everybody else has to go 55, but not me. Everybody else has to pay income tax, but not me. Because I don't have to. The laws of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah apply to the simple folk, but not to me. I'm a VIP. I'm a very important person. I'm a legend in my own mind. I don't need to follow the rules of the road. And arrogance is what allows us to think that we don't have to be machnia. We don't have to subordinate ourselves to God. Therefore, Pesach, on Pesach, what happens on Pesach? Pesach is the birth of the Jewish nation. Up until then, we were a collection of individuals separately approaching God. But afterwards, we came out from Egypt and we formed the beginnings of the Jewish people. And therefore, what does Pesach do? It reminds us that our mission statement cannot be one of arrogance. When we are becoming a nation, we cannot found ourselves on a foundation of hubris, on a foundation of arrogance, on a foundation of holier than thou, better than thou. Spirituality and moral integrity cannot be predicated on an arrogant foundation. We can only be the Or HaGola, the light unto the nations of the world, when we are humble, when we are modest. So here we have an extraordinary lesson. when we see what matzah is humble. It's simple. There's no hidden agendas. There are no pockets inside of matzah for you to hide something. You won't bite into a matzah and find garlic like you do with garlic bread. You won't find things like little raisins like you find in raisin challah. You see a simple, flat piece, unadorned, unembroidered, simplicity itself, where there is no hidden agendas, no hidden ideas, just simple, honest, fair, simple, honest truth. We continue if we look at the words of Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. He explains that there is a distinct connection between freedom and getting rid of chametz. What is the whole idea of freedom as opposed to slavery? And he says the following. We may think that freedom and slavery relate to different classes of people. One who works hard is a slave, while one who does whatever he wants is free. But we would be wrong, he says, because freedom is not obtained by having more and more leisure time. And one who works hard is not necessarily a slave. In fact, every one of us works pretty hard these days. Rather, he says, the key differentiation between slavery and freedom is that a slave is subservient to other people and acts only in concert with their will and their desires, while the free person is not enslaved to anyone or anything. He is true to his inner self and expresses this truth through all that he does. The slave does what others want him to do, while the free man does what he wants and needs to do. And if we look at slavery in our modern world, we see many, many people that are enslaved. It takes so many forms, slavery of today. An individual can feel that he is free, but while he's enslaved to addictions, right? He's a slave to his drug, to his alcohol. Another person is enslaved to, you know, his hedonistic pursuits. He's constantly spending all his time in pursuit of pleasure. He seems on the face of it to be a happy camper, enjoying life, doing whatever he wants. But in reality, after a while, the pleasure is not adequate, and he keeps on having to take on more and more pleasure and up the ante because it's never, ever enough. And this person gets deeper and deeper and deeper enslaved to his addiction. And soon after a while, he is not at all free. He is totally crippled by his addictive patterns. Some people are slaves to fashion. They have to always have the latest and the greatest, the newest and easiest look, right? Other people are enslaved, and we see this quite a bit in our culture, to the idea of what other people may think. And they're constantly keeping up with the Joneses, or in Jewish circles we say with the Schwartzes, and they're constantly trying to compete with their next-door neighbor. If this person has this, they have to have that. And they're continuously aware of what others are thinking of them. And they try to act in ways that will make them popular, even though it does not work for them on an emotional or moral level. Other people are workaholics, slaves to their jobs, to making money, etc. But the common denominator that pertains to all the examples that I have given is that the slave is serving people and interests that are not his own. This is the essence of the difference. The slave acts for other people and not for himself. We will continue this discussion next week when we pursue again the idea of ridding ourselves of our spiritual chametz.